Welcome to Brilliant Ideas Radio. Brilliant Ideas keeps you informed about all the products and people in the food industry. Friends, fun, music, news, and of course, food. Now pull yourselves up to the kitchen table with our hosts, Frank Price and Kerry Ingalls.
Welcome to another Brilliant Ideas Radio show. There's always something interesting going on here, and we never know from one minute to the next. And by the way, it's not Frank and Kerry tonight. It's going to be the Frank and Brian Mack show. Brian Mack is filling in as co-host. And Brian, welcome to the show, and thank you for on short notice for stepping in.
Well, thank you, Frank. It's a pleasure. To jump in there. I always like to talk food and music.
There you go. What else better is there to talk about than food and music? All right, folks. So Kerry is out, last minute change of guards here, and Brian Mack, as you may have remembered, what was it, about 5 weeks ago, 4 or 5 weeks ago, Brian was on our show, and Brian is a country music songwriter and singer in the Nashville area, and always been a good friend of mine and been around the block as probably as much as I have. But Brian, we do appreciate you coming on board here, and the good news is we'll get to promo some more of your music so that people in Memphis can hear Brian Mack and maybe go out there and buy some more albums and CDs and what have you. So thank you again.
Oh, that's great. My pleasure. My pleasure. Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting out in the airwaves again in the Memphis area and of course, across the waves of the interweb. Yes, absolutely. A lot of fun.
And speaking of that, about through the web and all, so I honestly don't remember. What is your website again if people want to find you as we're talking through the rest of the show here? But how do they get in touch with you if they want to buy your music?
Well, actually, they can go very simply to Amazon Music and just ask Alexa if you've got that situation, if you've got one of those units that will automatically do it for you, or you can go on your computer and get Amazon Music. You could either find my stuff through the Farm Dogs, which is my band locally here, or just Brian Mack. You've got 4 records up there, so anything that your heart would desire, you can find it on Amazon Music. So,
all right, there you go. There's the Brian Mack advertisement, and we'll bring it up later on during the show for those who missed it. And I guess Brian, the first thing I got to ask is, with all this Delta variant and all this mess going on with COVID, how are things changed, or have they changed in Nashville since the last time we talked?
You know, actually, when you go out from your house, the only reminder you have are the people that are driving around solo in their cars with a mask on. but if you go through a store or anything around Nashville area, you really don't see a lot of it going on. I think people are done with it. They're had it. That's my gut feeling anyway. You can go into the stores and you see some people with masks on. But as far as the shows are going on down on Broadway and the different venues, they're still going on live and packed, packed to the gills, shoulder to shoulder dancers and enjoying the music of the musicians downtown. There's, there's some 200 venues that are playing practically around the clock. I think they close for 2 hours or sweep the streets and then they do it again. But no, it's really not a, I'm infected.
I know that's good news because I'm seeing the same thing. I'm out and about in Maryland, and it seems like you're right. People are just sick and tired of being sick and tired, I guess. It's good to see. I've been venturing out myself and going to restaurants and going to bars and going to hotels and mingling with people. And, you know, I believe you can't hide anymore. I think we're all tired of just living in a cocoon and living under a mushroom. So it is good. It is good to hear. I did see a photograph on your Facebook page. I think it was last week that I'd never really seen before, but you had a picture, I believe, of Nashville downtown at like 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning. It looked like Vegas. I've never actually seen it like that before with all the lights.
Yeah, it has got the nickname Nash Vegas. But with the venues that are down, and that picture was Broadway, and there's a rarity where there might be a musician that's shooting a music video and they'll get permits to close off the street and, of course, keep all the lights on. I think that was one of those events. But that's like 3 a.m. in the morning, right after bars have closed and people are out of the bars. But, yeah, it was a beautiful shot, wasn't it? It was a surprise to me that I had so many people respond to it. But, of course, I just got out of Facebook jail, so I think they were surprised to see me post it anyway.
you spend more time behind bars than a damn person who actually works at a bar as a bartender. You're always in Facebook jail. What did you do this time?
Well, this one was actually I had posted a prediction, and this was prior to the debacle in Afghanistan of this fake president that we have. I just had posted what my thoughts were that, okay, this is going to go wrong. And this was like 2 weeks before it actually happened. But this is going to go wrong. We're going to lose some people. And that I also had stated that I think we're going to go back over there. That's my longstanding statement. There's too many people who have made too much money on that war, and they like the status quo. So I think they're going to find a way of getting us back in there, unfortunately. That was my gut feeling, and that's what I posted, you know. It went along with a picture of Biden eating an ice cream cone, so I think that maybe that was what put it over the top and put me in jail.
Yeah, but that's the part I don't get. And it's like, okay, that is Brian Mack's opinion. And that's the part I don't like about the way that these fact checkers will jump all over you. By the way, you got to learn how to block more of those fact checkers. I'll have to tell you how to do that. But it's just like everybody has an opinion just like a belly button. And I don't know. I mean, and actually, I think you're right. It's nothing but a toilet over there right now. And you're right. We're going to be back over there. I mean, it's going to be breeding more of the ISIS guys and more terrorists. And what a mess. What a mess. Anyway,
they put my classification as my post under hate. I'm like,
oh,
that was just, I even said, this is my opinion and my experience as a veteran that we've seen these situations before. And that was my opinion. It was stated right there. So, yeah, it was quick, too. They got me quick on that one. I was like, I think it was up for maybe 3 hours. And boom, they locked me up and sized me up with the orange suit and bracelets.
No, you cannot say anything against the agenda. And I guess you did. And yes, you do spend a lot of time in that Facebook jail, but oh well. Anyway, we try not to get into those weeds because you're never going to make everybody happy, no matter what your opinion is and what you have to say about politics, religion, whatever. You're always going to tick off somebody. So I don't know anymore. It used to be people had opinions and they could say what they wanted to say, and that was it. But now you hurt too many feelings. And I think you probably got a crowd that follow your page just looking for you to do something wrong.
Yeah, I've had that feeling for a while, and some people have messaged me and said, you have somebody on you. Yeah, I think so. So, I have a lot of followers, so I think that they want to control the impressionable or impressioners of impressionable people. So they don't want me talking to too many people, I guess. So, but anyway, we're going to talk some food.
Yeah, we're going to talk food. We'll get off the politics and the Afghanistan and terrorist thing and all that and go talk about food news, because that is what we're supposed to be doing. So my first question to you, Brian, and by the way, folks, Brian doesn't have any idea. Usually Carrie and I will prep before, and she at least knows what I'm going to be talking about. So, Brian, if I catch you off guard, I'm sorry, but that's what you get for joining in on the last minute. Okay, my first question to you is, what is your favorite fast food restaurant?
My system, favorite fast food system. Well, this is going to be raising some eyebrows. Chick-fil-A.
Chick-fil-A?
I think that.
Wow.
Yeah. And the fast food, I would say Chick-fil-A. And they have some of the best chicken, best prepared. And the thing is that I like organization, being a vet. I like how organized that system is, even prior to COVID. Now they've got an army of people that bring the food, get the order, and so forth, right out in the parking lot. But even before, it was quick, it was fast, and real good. Now you're going to probably ask me what's my favorite thing there, right?
Well, no. Actually, I was curious.
Okay.
This is going to probably surprise you. I can't stand Chick-fil-A. I don't like Chick-fil-A. Never have liked Chick-fil-A. And everybody looks at me sideways when I say this, but I've never been a fan of their chicken sandwich. I've never liked their waffle fries. They're always soggy. I always thought it was overhyped and never really cared for it. But that's just me. That's my opinion, but I've never really liked Chick-fil-A.
Well, you can have an opinion, Frank. You can. It's fine.
Yeah.
But I look at all the others, you know. It's probably the lesser of the evils that are out there. Fast food in itself is pretty much evil, prepared food and chemical-wise. But, we're talking like the Burger Kings and the McDonald's and even the Jack in the Boxes and the places like that. It's really the preparation and the person behind the counter and the person in the kitchen. If your fries are soggy or something, somebody didn't do those fries right. So, but I've had more problems with burgers of not giving a damn about the burger, how it actually ended up between the buns. And I think they give them, you know, at a Sonic, they give it one more little smash. So it completely doesn't look edible at all. But I tell you, at the Chick-fil-A, if you order the 12-piece grilled chicken pieces. Now, they come hot right out of the grill. And then a side salad and get an oil and vinegar dressing. Throw that chicken on that salad and that oil and vinegar on there. Wash it down with a Dr. Pepper. You're there. So.
Well, like everybody's got their own opinion and their favorites. And the reason I'm asking the question, there was a recent study that was done, and this was based on the court of public opinion through Twitter. And this is kind of interesting to me, but this company, it's called Rave Reviews, has been monitoring Twitter based on how people, negatives and positives that people say about different fast food operations. And Twitter, they say, is a good place because people tend to be honest, and when they're not happy, they say it, and when they are happy, they say it. So this company, Rave Reviews, went out and did a study over the last 3 months as to who were the favorite and the best and the worst in the fast food chains. And according to the team at Rave Reviews, based on these tweets, popular chains out there, take a guess. Who do you think the most popular was?
Well, you know, the icon, probably the Golden Arches are up there. I mean, are you saying you have a top 10 list? Is that what you got going?
I have the bottom list. I do have the number one, and actually, And guess what? You were correct. The number one was Chick-fil-A. They actually had some of the best reviews and positive comments that were made about their restaurant versus some of these other ones. But the turds in the bucket, the ones that didn't do so well, I was actually kind of surprised. According to their analysis, McDonald's, Subway, Starbucks, believe it or not, Starbucks, and Wendy's were all found to be the most hated fast food chains in several countries. This is worldwide, by the way.
Wow.
But none of them could hold a candle to KFC. KFC has the worst ratings on Twitter than any other fast food operation. And I was surprised about that, but it was the most hated brand in as many as 14 countries, and it took the cake as the number one most hated fast food brand in the world. The countries who hated it the most were New Zealand, United Arab Emirates, France, Singapore, and Turkey, were the highest at what they call the hate rate for KFC. And most of it was surrounded about the quality of the chain's food. Now, I must be living in a different world because I like KFC. Now, they're not like they were when I was a kid. I liked it even more then. But I still like KFC, but I was surprised at the amount of hatred that people have all around the world for KFC. Now, I don't eat there that often, but I've never really been disappointed. I've always liked their chicken sandwiches, their chicken strips, their the little, what do you call those chicken, the little barbecue sandwiches? I mean, how do you feel about KFC?
Well, the thing is that I went quite a while with not going into a KFC because I saw that they were joining forces with A&W. Now, nothing against A&W, but they're actually combining, A&W Burgers and Root Beer with KFC. So that's a corporation on the decline. But then I did have – I was doing a project in a small little town, and all they had was a KFC right there, one of the old school type KFCs. But right off the bat, I noticed that the chicken was small. And I usually will order like a half a chicken grilled, you know what they do. I try to stay away from deep fried, that kind of stuff. But anyway, the chicken looked actually like a game hen. It was so small. It was like the leg was the size of a wing. So I think that they've just been getting very young birds and made it, you know, their product line. I don't know. But that I found that again at the same old school store in another town. So I was really kind of disappointed. And for the price point, I was really disappointed. I mean, you can't really mess up mashed potatoes and gravy. That wasn't a problem, but everything else just seemed to be inferior and small and not really caring for the customer. And I think that's my biggest thing. I like Chick-fil-A because they take care of their customer, and it's organized like a ship. I mean, you look at there's a guy running this way and that way, and they're intercommunicating and they know what's going on. And you get your meal and it's hot and it's as you would imagine it would be. So anyway, I can see that, you know, KFC. As far as the Starbucks, I think that would be interesting to see that they're on the list of most hated. I think the only thing that they serve food-wise would be the egg white sandwich of the morning and stuff. That seems, strange to me.
McDonald's is McDonald's, and what I've always said about McDonald's is that no matter where you go, now I don't travel worldwide, but wherever you go in the country, when you go into McDonald's, you get basically the same food no matter where you are. So I've always said they're very consistent with what they do. And, you know, if you're expecting some, you know, 5-star restaurant meal there, then don't go to McDonald's. But they're always very consistent with their system. Now, Subway, I was a little surprised they're on the list. I think Subway is trying to improve their, I don't know what you want to call it, the way people look at them because they've got people like Jimmy Johns and those are the folks that they're competing with now. But Subway's another one. I think it's very consistent. Of course, it all depends on what you order on your sandwich. But they have, no matter where you go to Subway, they're pretty much all the same. Yeah, Starbucks did surprise me. Of course, I hate going to a Starbucks myself because the menu board intimidates me.
I don't like when they reinvent the wheel, you know. I want a small, medium, or large. I don't want a grande del something, something, you know. Exactly.
And then Wendy's, you know, I think Wendy's, I thought they had improved their position in the world of fast food over the last few years. But anyway, they're on the top doo-doo list, as you want to call it, and up there with KFC. And now, that was worldwide. In the United States, it was slightly different. The number one worst, most hated, and it's not really fast food, but most hated company actually turned out to be Domino's Pizza. That Domino's, Americans took to Twitter to criticize Domino's more than any other fast food brand and expressed negative sentiments about it in as many as 40% of all tweets directed at the company. So Domino's, which I was surprised at that.
Well, that might be the fact that, you know, if you're ordering and it comes to your house cold and they don't care, that would be a big marker. And somebody would grab their phone right away and, oh, get them and get on Twitter and give them all, you know, fire and brimstone. But I would think that that would be the situation there. Interesting.
Yeah, actually, it further says the chain was getting lots of flack for its subpar customer service, issues with their deliveries, and food items missing from their orders, among other things on Twitter.
Well, you know, that goes across the lines of all of them, is customer service in our country sucks right now. It is just, I mean, I find I go anywhere. I went to a Harbor Freight just the other day, and I had to tell the manager, you know, can you not answer the phone when I'm at the register? I mean, customer service, please. Something. Yeah. I mean, it's the little things. They don't have it. This guy had manager on his name tag, too. You know.
Yeah, I can agree. Yeah, I think people have gotten to the point of the
problem.
They don't care anymore because they think they can leave that job anytime and go get a different job somewhere else because there's so many job openings. So, yeah, you're right. Customer service has gone down the tubes. And then this was interesting. You notice I did not mention Burger King. Now, Burger King has had a bad reputation for many years during these studies that Rave Reviews has been doing. They didn't even make the list. It says, meanwhile, Burger King can breathe a major sigh of relief. The brand no longer holds the inevitable title, which has had recently at the last few years, and they weren't even on the top or bottom five lists. So Burger King actually improved their position.
Well, you know, that's a heck of a burger, you know, that they get that fire grill taste going there. I mean, every once in a while I get a hankering for a big old burger, and I want to have an upset stomach for a couple hours and don't mind. I mean, because that's a lot of food. But
yeah,
I got to tell you a story. You were talking about McDonald's and its standards. Back in the 70s, it was 77. I was traveling Europe, and I was there for 3 months. I was backpacking and going all through Europe and sightseeing and whatnot. And you get homesick. Oh my goodness, you get completely homesick with the different kinds of foods and things. At first, it's great trying different foods in Europe, but after a while, I want some American. I went to Amsterdam, and there was a McDonald's, and it was just like – this was like 2 months into my trip. This was like nirvana. I was taking it all in, you know. And the Big Mac was a Big Mac, you know. The fries were exactly like I remembered them back home. So, you know, there is that standard that they've got, and it's worked for them quite well. But I think they're always going to be the whipping boy on the list.
Yeah, they always get picked on when it comes to everything, it seems like. But, you know, like you said, no matter where you go, and there you were worldwide, McDonald's is McDonald's. So you know exactly what you're going to get, and it's never any different. So The bottom line, I think that's why they've been successful all these years. In fact, I got a story. Let's see. I do have a story about McDonald's later on here. Let's see here. Yeah, I'll wait to discuss that. There's another story about McDonald's and the amount of Happy Meals that they sell on an annualized basis that blew me away. But we'll get to that one in a few minutes. All right.
Oh, wow.
Moving along. We're going to switch gears here. I don't know. Are you a drinking man? Do you drink wine, whiskey, or any kind of spirits?
Yes, I do. And I'm like right in the land of white liquor and all kinds of bourbons and things like that. So if there's a tour to that's out there, I'll make it. I'll go find it. And then the thing is I grew up in wine country. A couple of my jobs that I had as a kid in high school were planting grapes. And so that, you know, I've got some feel for it, and there'd be field trips and Tokay grapes and those kinds of things in Lodi and Stockton. So yeah, I know my wines. I know, you know, what goes with what and why, what goes where.
Well, as you can imagine, because of the pandemic, Americans are using alcohol to cope with the stress of the pandemic. And this was a recent study that was done over the last 18 months since the COVID-19 breakout. Nearly 1 in 5 people report, quote unquote, heavy drinking, consuming unhealthy amounts of alcohol, a new survey suggests. 17% of respondents reported heavy drinking in the past 30 days. Well, when I was reading the article, I'm like, okay, what's considered heavy drinking? And when I get there, I was like, oops, I think I fall into that category. The Harris poll, and commissioned by Alkermes, an Ireland-based biopharmaceutical company, the survey was conducted online from March 30th to April 7th among 6,006 U.S. adults ages 21 and older. Of those 6,006, 1,003 adults reported heavy drinking. And here's the definition of heavy drinking. Heavy drinking was defined as having had 2 heavy drinking days in a single week at least twice in the previous 30 days. A heavy drinking day was defined as 4 or more drinks containing alcohol for women and 5 or more drinks containing alcohol for men. Dr. Gandortra, chief medical officer at the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Service Administration, said, the study findings were not surprising, which it wasn't really surprising to me. What have people been doing? They've been cooped up. They got nothing to do but party, I guess. Almost 90% of the individuals with substance use disorder are not in treatment, and the alcohol and drugs are typically worsened when you're in isolation. Several studies have suggested that Americans are buying more alcohol and drinking more frequently during the corona pandemic. A study by the RAND Corporation last fall found the frequency, this is interesting, frequency of alcohol consumption in the U.S. rose 14% compared with before the pandemic. Women in particular increased heavy drinking days by 41%. That's because they're home with all the kids, I think.
Well, I want to know one thing. Who's setting the standards? At 14% is heavy drinking? I would say it would be like 25 or 30%, you know, but they're saying 14%, calling that heavy drinking.
They say it rose 14%. They said 41% of the women were actually heavy drinkers.
Yeah, well, you know, you get into those wine clutches and those ladies, they like their wine, and you know, it's a happy buzz, and a happy mom is a happy household. So I don't really see a problem in that. I mean, where's the problem? You know, the only thing I get this every time I go to the VA, you know, and I'm answering the same questions over, and they're going, well, how many drinks do you drink? You know, do you smoke? I don't smoke. Okay, so how many drinks do you have? And you just watch them, and you know you're going to lie. You know, you're going to say, well, I brought a 12-pack home, and I had 3 of the beer. And then the doctor's looking over his glasses and going, yeah, sure. Are you telling me you got a 12-pack in there and you only had 3? I say, yes, I only had 3. I didn't, yeah. But I want to tell you about the shots that came with those 3, you know.
Well, here's my problem. Okay, I've been known, not on a steady steady basis, but I've been known to pop the cork on a wine bottle at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay. That's close enough.
Yeah.
That's close enough to wine time. But okay. There's like four glasses of wine in a bottle, right? Roughly four glasses,
sure.
Depending on how much you pour, but roughly four. All right. So I start at four. When I finish that bottle off at 10 or 11, 12 o'clock at night, I have to say, well, okay, I drank a whole bottle of wine, but that was over like a, you know, 6, 7, 8 hour period. So to me, it's like, it just also depends, are you binge drinking and drinking that bottle in an hour, or are you drinking that bottle over a period of time? So, and people argue, they'll say, no, Frank, you drank a whole bottle of wine. Yeah, that's like eating an apple pie. I've had apple pie and eat over a 4 day period, but I ate a whole apple pie, but not in one sitting.
Exactly. Yeah, what's I think it's much ado about nothing. Really should leave people
yeah.
alone. And certainly the grape vineyards, the wineries and the breweries and the distilleries, they're sure enjoying it. So, you know, let it be as it is. As long as nobody's driving, I think it's go for it.
That's my kind of my thing, too. I mean, people are at home for the most part during this whole coronavirus bullcrap that's been going on. So if they're home, they're drinking, they're enjoying their spirits, their wine, their beer, whatever, leave them alone. Now, it does say another study by researchers, I always like these studies, University of Arizona found dramatic increases in harmful alcohol consumption over the first 6 months of the pandemic, but it tailed off after that. Greater alcohol consumption was most associated with job loss because of COVID-19, according to the study. So, I mean, you know, people
yeah.
lost their jobs. They're drinking their sorrows away. I mean, it's just, it's kind of like no kidding, but the next story is going to blow you. The next story is related to this, which is going to blow you away, which is it all goes hand in hand. It says, according to the new Harris Poll survey, many respondents who reported heavy drinking said that over the past 12 months, they experienced negative mental, physical, and psychosocial impacts. Now, okay, I personally enjoy my wine and my drinking, and I don't have psychosocial impacts, I don't believe. But
I think if they're getting those things, they're drinking it wrong. They're doing something wrong. I don't know. I tend to feel good, and I'm a little happier. I don't know. With these psychoschematic and all these other different situations. I think it's people that want to study something.
I think people have been depressed and let them drink and leave them alone, but it has gone up dramatically, which brings me to the next story, which is related to this, which is actually kind of funny in a way. There's a liquor shortage caused by the COVID-19 pandemic. Yep. And many states are having a hard time keeping certain liquors on the shelves. So the next time you go to the liquor store, you might, depending on some of the states you're in, you may not be able to find the liquor that you're looking for. Early in the pandemic, it was common to find libations low in stock after some liquor stores briefly closed amid statewide lockdowns and skyrocketing consumer demand. But continued reports of shortages from Vermont to New Jersey and to Ohio persist more than a year later, and some states are rationing their liquor supply amid ongoing supply chain issues. Now, in Tennessee, are they rationing anything there?
Not that I have seen, but I have seen a local liquor store that has, I think that he's getting close to shutting down himself. So he's limiting what he's bringing in. But then you go to some of the other liquor stores that are like discount liquors and those kinds of things. They're filled up to the gills with bourbons and whiskey. I don't really see that being a shortage unless it's been a man-made shortage, an artificial shortage. Because I mean, like with beer, they can just, there's breweries on every corner, it seems to be, you know, a little, so I don't see that being a problem here. When I was up in Pennsylvania, my daughter lives up there with her kids and husband up there. They didn't seem to have a shortage either. in that area. They're up in the Waterloo area. But I don't know. I think that there's some manipulation going on with all of our consumables, all of our beverages and foods and things, because I think that they're messing with us. I think they're limiting the supply chain. You see these stories of these ships that are off the coast and not allowed to come in the port. And people are speculating, okay, what's causing that? Oh, they're saying, well, there's nobody on the docks to unload the ships. Because they were getting paid from Biden $300 a week or whatever it may be. I think that that's a cock and bull story myself, because those are longshoremen. That's union. So $300 is nothing to those guys. So I don't know why.
You say that. It's funny. I've got a story about that. I'm looking for it while you were talking. They've broken a record now. There are 79 off the coast of California. There are 79 ships sitting out there. Like 2 weeks ago, I had a story that they had broken a record, and there was 45 that were waiting to be unloaded. Okay. Now, as of this past week, there are 79 ships waiting to be unloaded off the ports of Los Angeles and San Francisco. Yep. So
that's a strange thing, but anything in California is, I'm not surprised by anything that happens in California with the government there. Maybe there's levies or something they're not talking about, but it just seems that people are manipulating the chain of supply and trying to put a pinch on America right now. That's just my gut feeling, and I'll probably go to Facebook jail for it. But
I have to say, I'm in the supply business. That's what I do. That's my real job. And are some issues going on, and I'm in the food packaging. And there are issues mm-hmm. out there when it comes to plastic resins and things such as that, foils and things like that. And then also there's companies. In fact, one of my competitors mm-hmm. is right now in a situation where 50% of their employees are out because of COVID, and they're running at like a 40% capacity. So there are some true shortages that are being caused, but I also believe you're right. There's some man-made ones out there too, just to make things a little worse than they really need to be, to keep stirring the pot. But it's a mixed
and drive
bag.
Exactly.
Now, you said Pennsylvania, right? Yes, where you see your daughter lives?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, this is interesting. The Pennsylvania State Board, speaking of Pennsylvania, in charge of consumer liquor sales, announced last week that it was limiting customers to 2 bottles of certain alcoholic beverages per day. The Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board said the purchase limit on select items include Hennessy Buffalo Trace Bourbon, and Patron Tequila. And they said that these limits will be in place for the foreseeable future.
I'll be done.
Yeah. So, hey, tell your daughter to stock up on this, on those 3 items, Hennessy, Buffalo Trace, and Patron Tequila, because they're gonna be cutting back and not letting her buy as much.
that's a pretty cheap type of cognac, isn't it? I mean, like in the liqueurs more than anything. But, interesting. Well, I mean, Jose Cuervo must be real happy about that if they're going after Patron.
It says that liquor stores in North Carolina are encountering out-of-stock signs instead of their favorite spirits amid an ongoing supply shortage there. And so it looks like it has a lot to do with what state you live in and the areas that you live in, but there are some shortages popping up all over the country. And of course, if you listen to my story a minute ago, the reason why there's a shortage is because more people are drinking. So
this is true. Yeah. Well, the thing, if it's related to the ships that are off the coast, that would be like the imported liquors and those kind of things, of that supply chain. The domestic, I would see there'd be no problem with domestic alcohol, especially like Tennessee and Kentucky for these types of bourbons and whiskeys. But Yeah, interesting. Interesting. And then Mexico,
well, you know,
certainly.
You just said about those ships. Now, this is further in the article. Some producers are struggling to get their glass bottles, which a lot of those come from overseas. And the glass bottles are not readily available. So in turn, of course, they can't bottle as much, in turn, which means there's a shortage. And so it's all tied together. If you can't get bottles, you can't make the product. So that is part of the problem, too. And there's a shortage, of course, of truck drivers delivering the product, which we deal with on a daily basis. I mean, if you're in the trucking business now, those guys are making money hand over fist.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. I looked at that, thought about, I could buy a truck. They're doing pretty good and insurance and all that, but it's the long hours. I don't think that would be a desirable situation. And I think that there's a certain type of person that could take that, being on the road for so long and getting those and supplying them. There's a certain type that could do that. Interesting, you were talking about glass. And just today I heard was in an interview with John Rich, from Big and Rich, and he was also on The Apprentice. He's a good friend of Trump. But he's got a fantastic whiskey. I mean, you got to have some. It's called the Riviera. I'm probably getting it wrong, Star Riviera or something like that. But it's the same as the name of his bar on Broadway. And he professes that the glass is all American. American glass, American corks, American everything that's on his box and his production is American made. And he says he foresees that in the future, companies are going to have to go over to the U.S. And it's going to take a while. It's going to be expensive. He says the glass is expensive in the United States, but it's more accurate. What it is that the glass overseas has been so undervalued and underpriced in quality overall cost to make that it's driven up the price of the U.S. So there's going to be an evening out here, and I'm glad to see people like he, like John, are taking that step first and being kind of pioneers in putting out a product that is completely 100% USA. I love that. His whiskey is really good. Doesn't last very long around here. But anyway.
That's what everybody should be shooting for anyway. I won't go there. Get into the whole Chinese discussion. We won't go there. One thing, too, because there's so many people drinking now and excessively drinking, this is common sense. Liquors simply take a long time to make, and you just can't make liquor quickly because you've got to age it and do all that's involved in making liquors and wines. And producers have to grow or buy the ingredients, distill the product, then let it age. That means producers must anticipate demand years in advance. Well, they didn't expect this kind of demand 2 or 3 years ago. They can't simply just turn on a spigot and start filling up bottles with all different types of alcohol. You can't go back 5 years and retroactively plant more agave, said one of these plant managers at a tequila plant. The distiller Buffalo Trace, whose bourbon is currently limited to 2 bottles per day for customers in Pennsylvania, is undertaking a $1.2 billion expansion, but says it will still take a few years before it can fully meet consumer demand. Here's the question. They spend all this money to meet the demand. Is the demand going to stay up, or are they going to have excess inventory, which means the prices will come down? Supply and demand.
That's a tough market to be in. That's the same with, the wine growers, too. They've got to think about their plants. It takes them 4 years to get a plant that actually produces the grapes that they can use. And even then, and at distilleries, it takes 15 years in some of these expensive liquors. So what if they kill off their customer base with alcoholism, and then they get to the other end just to buy what they've invested into? Wow.
Exactly.
Get your company going.
They have to plan all these things so far in advance. And who would ever believe that the pandemic would have happened and all the things that have changed due to that. And, you know, 2 or 3 years ago, no one would have ever anticipated all this. And they got to be sitting pretty. I mean, they're selling as fast as they can make it, but it's going to take them a while to catch up. And then when they do finally catch up, well, the demand still be there. So anyway.
Yeah.
Let's see. What time is it? We got to take a break here in a second. Yeah, we got to take a break. So everybody don't go away. We got a whole ton more of food news to go through. And I'm going to let you pick the song, Brian, since it's your music. Do you have,
oh my goodness,
do you have a preference of what song you want me to play of Brian Maxwell?
What have you got queued up? What do you got?
Oh my goodness, I got everything here. I've got. Let me see. Let me punch in Brian Mack, and I'll read them to you. Tell me which one you want to play. Okay, Brian Mack, you come up with a whole bunch. I mean, over the years, you have given me a bunch of different music. We got It's Raining on the 4th of July. Well, it's not really close to 4th of July, so we'll skip that one. How about we got Mama Don't Worry, of course, Smiles All Around. Skipping Rocks with Grandpa, which that's actually a cool song. Let's see, what else do we have here? Brian Mack. I'd Bring an Umbrella, Gardening Woman, Dug and Hollow?
Yeah, how about some Gardening Woman? How about Gardening Woman? That seems to be
Gardening Woman.
Most requested, actually, over in Germany on a radio station over there that I've found that they kind of like the banjo in there.
Oh, really? And you said you actually were inspired to do this song and write this song because of your wife, right?
Yes, my wife loves plants, and I can attest to that. When you go through our house, we've got just plants everywhere year round. She manages a local big box store in the gardening department, and she just loves her plants. So one day she was out shoveling and came back with dirt here and there and a shovel in her hand and just a grin from ear to ear. So I thought, there's a song right there. So yeah, it wrote itself. Let's put it that way.
All right. We're going to play Gardening Woman. Don't go away. Brian and I will be back shortly. I'll play a couple of your songs. We'll take a brief break here and we'll come back and talk about some more food news. So everyone hang tight. We'll be right back.
She's a bald cap ponytail gardener, smiles like flowers in summer, dirt on her knees and under her nails. Smiles like a genuine killing snail. Lord gave me a gardening woman. I'm in love with the pretty girl. Lord gave me a gardening woman. When I get home, we're gonna round the world. Flower in her song. Lord gave
We don't know this, but that last song I played, Dusty Trail, that was the last time you were on the show. I had several people say to me that they really love that song. Is that on your upcoming new album? Is that on one of your older CDs?
No, that's coming up right now. That one can be had on Amazon Music if people want to get a copy of that. Just kind of found a riff and just stayed with it and played with it. That's a COVID recorded song, and this record is as well. And to give you details on that, nobody wants to come over to your studio and record and play their instrument. So you got to do what you got to do. You got a song in your head, and I'm actually playing all the instruments on that. Did all the mixing and everything in my own studio here. That's kind of what you do. You make things happen.
I picture, you know, you always see the guy, the one man band with the trumpet and the bass drum and the tambourine. That's kind of what you have to do now, right? You have to be like the one man band.
Yeah. Well, thank God now you have some technology so we can actually do a track and then play and overdub it, and play with the track, but. You know, I have done some live gigs where I've got a harmonica going, a guitar going, vocals, and then a foot bass. So I've been that guy in the past.
Now, I can't remember, and I should have remembered because I thought it was a great name. What I know you're working on your new CD, and what is the name that you have given that? It was a great name.
Yeah, same trailer, different park. It's kind of got a mixture of tunes in there and it's good feeling stuff. And I'd like to give you a little a present in between songs too, because I think that dead space between the song, you know, you think about when our old LPs and you could hear the needle going from song to song. Well, on CD, you know, you got that blank space, or even on cassette, we had that blank space. So I always liked, when I was a kid, hearing the discussions between musicians, between songs. Sometimes you'd get that, or you'd – I mean, the Beatles were famous for that.
Right.
They would come up with you know, hearing some studio talk. George would be bantering with Paul or something like that. But I kind of had a radio station here for a little while, Farm Dog Radio. You may remember it. And I would interview a lot of the musicians that came that I saw in town here and bring them in and interview, and they play their music live and whatnot. But I'd always have them do a channel announcement, you know. So I stuffed those little tidbits of information things in between songs on the record. So you think about the people that buy the CD, they've got a physical record. They need a little extra, you know. If you're down, if you're getting the download, you just get the song. I try to give you the extras. It's tough, you know, with this technology. But anyway, yeah, that record is soon to come out. I've been working on a song, in fact, today for it that I think will kind of round out the record, and we'll get it out to Amazon Music and Spotify and all your outlets that you can pick up digital. You know, right now it's working really well where you don't really have to have a publisher anymore. And you can put it out yourself. You know, I tell people all the time, they think it's complicated, but you know, it's the medium is there and you can put out your own records and get it to the end user, the listener, and the fan very quickly. So,
well, I'm not supposed to ask you when it's going to be done because you don't ask artists that question. So, but it's I guess what coming out sometime in the full CD probably sometime in early 2022.
Yeah, I would say between now and Christmas. I'm going to try to hit that Christmas kind of thing, and and there's enough copies right now of Dug and Hollow that's out. You can get hard copies of that at CD Baby. They will ship you a copy, or you can become a friend on my Facebook page, and I'll ship a copy off to you. I just love doing that. That's a lot of fun.
But the only thing with that is Brian, that you may not be there. You may be in jail.
I know that's the toughest thing. It's trying to stay connected, and then be a person too. You know.
All right. Well, everybody check out his music, and also we're looking forward to Same Trailer, Different Park when it comes out, and and maybe yep. Brian will stay out of jail in the meantime. All right, we're going to move on to some more food news, and I'm associated with the meat industry, pork industry, poultry industry, and have been for nearly 40 years. And when I read this next news event here, I couldn't believe it. But over in London, the UK meat industry is warning of imminent supply threat from a shortage of CO2. And they're talking, within the next 2 weeks, they're talking about major shortage in the meat industry over in the UK. The meat processor will start running out of carbon dioxide, it says, within the next 5 days. Well, that will be actually when this is broadcast on Saturday. They're going to be running out of CO2, forcing them to halt production and impacting supplies to retailers. A jump in gas prices has forced several domestic energy suppliers out of the business and has shut fertilizer plants down that also make CO2 as a byproduct. And for those of you who don't know, the CO2 is used to stun animals before slaughter, in the vacuum packaging of food products to extend the shelf life, and to put the fizz in beer, cider, and soft drinks. And CO2 is a solid form of dry ice, of course. Anyway, they're coming up with a shortage over in UK. So they're saying that there's some supermarkets that literally are going to run out of meat in the next couple of weeks because there's no way for these people to process. They said meat, beer, sodas, anything that has anything to do with CO2, there's going to be a major shortage in the UK. Crazy.
My goodness. You know, it just seemed to be, is there any good news that's going around on food? Please, dish me up some good news.
there's some good news. Samuel Adams just came out with a new beer. But unfortunately, it's illegal in 28 states.
Yeah, I've heard that. I read that article. I said, now that is a potent beer. Put you on your butt, isn't it, up there with the whiskey count and alcohol? My goodness.
Yes, actually, let's see. The ABV of this new beer is 28%. Well, you know, vodka and all those other type hard liquors and stuff, they're usually like 40%. So it's up there close to your regular alcohol. It's called Utopia Beer. And according to press releases from the company, Utopia, which is it's barrel aged and released every 2 years, is described by the company as a spirited blend of multiple batches of our extreme beers. This particular batch was finished with 2,000 pounds of cherries for subtle notes of honeyed apricot and caramel to the rich flavors. But it's illegal in 28 states. Let me see if it's legal in your state, Tennessee. Yes, it's legal in Tennessee. It's legal in my state too, in Maryland. But here's the problem. Did you see how much it cost?
Oh no, how much?
It says for those who want to get their hands on a bottle legally, of course, you'll have to pay a little bit more than your average six pack. Get this: a bottle of the latest batch of Utopia beer retails for a suggested price of $240 a bottle.
What?
A bottle.
Oh my goodness! Oh my goodness! Is it in a gold binding or something? Is it gold leaf on the bottle? What's going on there? Wow.
It's limited supply, but yeah, if you want to drink one, it's going to cost you 240 big ones. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
They'll sell them all, too. You know they're going to sell them all.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable.
They will. Once you say that somebody can't have something and there's a limit, people line up. They want it. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. I mean, if someone gave me a bottle, I certainly wouldn't refuse it, but I don't think I'm going to go out and buy a $240. I don't care how good it is and how much alcohol it's got in it. That's a little on the hefty side. Now
that is, like you say, if somebody bought me one, I would drink it because you know you can't keep beer around very long anyway. So
that's true. Can't. It's not impossible, actually. All right, now this next story is going to probably blow your mind, Mr. Brian Mack.
Yep.
It blew my mind. It blew my mind, and it's food related. And I when I read it the first, I thought, man, we're like in the Twilight Zone. Here we go.
Okay,
everybody knows about vaccines and the whole dilemma about vaccines. Vaccines, should you get them? Should you not get them? Mandates, et cetera, et cetera. Well, scientists are growing medicine-filled plants to replace the injections and vaccines. Thanks to a $500,000 grant from the National Science Foundation, researchers are now looking to accomplish three goals. First, the team will try to successfully deliver DNA containing mRNA vaccines into plant cells where they can replicate. Next, the study authors want to show that the plants can actually produce enough mRNA to replace a traditional injection. Finally, the team will need to determine the right dosage people will need to eat to properly replace vaccinations. It says ideally, I know this is creepy. Ideally, a single plant would produce enough mRNA to vaccinate a single person. We're testing this approach with spinach and lettuce. Now, think about this. They can now set it up and put it in spinach and your lettuce and have long-term goals of people growing it in their own gardens. Are you going to plant a garden of this there, Brian?
Probably not of that, but I would grow other things. But
exactly. If you're going to do this, why can't we all plant pots and all those other fun things? It says here, I couldn't believe it. I thought I was reading science fiction. Is that in the new study, the team from UC San Diego the professor Nicole Steinmetz uses what they call nanotechnology to deliver more genetic material into chloroplasts. Our idea is to repurpose naturally occurring nanoparticles in a plant virus gene delivery to plants. Some engineering goes into this to make the nanoparticles go to chloroplast, which is like, I guess that's chlorophyll, same thing as chlorophyll, and make them non-infectious towards the plant. One of the reasons I started working in nanotechnology was so I could apply it to plants and create new technology solutions, not just for food, but for high-value products as well, like pharmaceuticals. So there you go.
Yeah.
they're going to sneak it in our lettuce and our spinach.
Well, you can apply for grant money and study how the inchworm can eat that plant and what effects that he gets. And then when you come to the end of that money, you can apply for another allocation of money so you can study how cats that eat the worm, they're affected by eating the spinach. And, oh, my goodness.
There's some serious, I don't know what the word is, serious crap that can happen here from this study. But
talk about GMO to the second, right? GMO squared. Nanoparticles, that nanotechnology, I think that is absolutely playing with fire. They've been testing, these aerosols and things that go into our atmosphere, and they're in nanoparticles, which we breathe. And they're so small and minute that you breathe in these metals and these things, they go to your brain. So I don't know. This really, I think it's caught in on working these nanoparticles and these types of things. Yeah.
Well, it's amazing. You're right. It's GMO squared. And, people get all upset about GMOs. Well, this is like Frankenstein's monster squared. You're right. It's just like unbelievable what we're talking about doing here.
Nobody thinks of the consequences. They think of making a fortune and coming up with it. They don't think of the bad side, the consequences. Kind of like, I hate to go back to the Wuhan thing, but what were they thinking? Why are you messing with such a virus or a product? What? It had to have nefarious reasons for messing with it in the first place. It's not going to, I'm not buying the Fauci's as it occurs naturally.
No.
If it would occur naturally, why didn't it occur in the 40s?
They were up to no good. We all know it. We all know they were all no good. They're looking for ways to make all these bioterror type things. And whether it was released on purpose or escaped from the laboratory, they were screwing with Mother Nature big time there.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that story, we know that story is not over with. And I think Fauci's story is certainly not over with. We're going to be seeing some things about him very soon. Yep.
I think you're right. So let's go from scary Frankenstein stories back to McDonald's Happy Meals. there's no segue there. How many Happy Meals do you think McDonald's sells each year?
Oh my goodness. You think about how many kids that they just love those toys and those Happy Meals. I would say in the millions.
They sell over 1 billion Happy Meals every year.
Billions with a B.
B. Billion with a B. Well, Happy Meals about to change. McDonald's is going to mess with it. McDonald's is going to transition all of its Happy Meal toys to products made from renewable, recyclable, or certified materials by 2025.
Oh, boy.
Oh boy, that's what I said. Oh, boy.
You're
going to have to save the world and save the seals and all that stuff by Happy Meals.
It's been so successful with the straws out in the West Coast, getting rid of straws worked so well. Yeah, now you get a paper straw in plastic.
So glad they got rid of those straws. I don't know how I could live my life without them doing that myself. Okay.
I know.
Let's move on to another story. All right. Do you sleep at night, Brian? And I say that because as we get older, we don't sleep as much.
Yeah, I was told I did a lot of snoring by the wife, and she was going to shoot me in the head some night. But I'm glad she didn't. I got a CPAP, and now I sleep very well.
Well, how many hours of sleep do you think you get on an average night?
I get about seven. You know, I am
okay.
A musician, so you know, we do roll out of bed and go hit a guitar and play. But I tell you what, the plague of the musician or the plight of the musician is you get an idea 2 a.m. while you're asleep. You get up and you won't get any sleep that night. But now generally I'll get 6 to 7. Yeah.
Well, that's good because you're actually within the recommended daily estimate guidelines of what they say you should get is up to 7 hours of sleep. If you get less than that, then it causes all the kinds of things. And here's the study. It's actually one of those studies that, like, I could have told them this without spending the money. But missing out on the recommended 7 or more hours of sleep per night could lead to more opportunities to make poor snacking choices than those made by people who meet the shut-eye guidelines. Well, no kidding. If you're awake, what are we doing? We're eating snacks or chomping on something we're not supposed to, like potato chips or popcorn or something like that. But anyway, they did this analysis of data of almost 20,000 American adults and showed that there was a link between not meeting sleep recommendations and eating more snack-related carbohydrates with added sugar, fats, and caffeine. The research also revealed what appears to be a popular American habit, not influenced by how much we sleep, but how much we snack at night. And, of course, if you eat too much snacks, you're not going to sleep that well anyway, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah. So kind of goes, it depends on what you eat. Yeah. No comfort food.
Well,
yeah.
Not to read all the boring data here, because to me this is done by the Ohio State University, and bottom line is that said that not only are we not sleeping when we stay up late, but we're doing all of the obesity-related behaviors that go along with that, and lack of physical activity, increased screen time, bad food choices that are consuming snacks, not as meals. So it creates a bigger impact of meeting or not meeting sleep recommendations. Well, I mean, just like, this is all common sense, but anyway, it also talked about people who don't sleep 7 hours or more are usually have more chance of being overweight, having diabetes, having other health issues. So people sleep longer and eat less. I guess that's the moral of that story. Eat less snacks.
Okay. So go to bed hungry. That would be that's what the old adage was. Is like go to bed with a little bit of hunger on you, and you'll be all right in the morning. So you won't, but you may get up and eat something.
So. Matter of fact, I read something the other day that I never really thought about. But do you know where the name breakfast comes from?
Isn't it something like breaking of your fasting? You fasted
Yes, that's exactly where it came from. When people go to sleep, they're literally fasting for 7, 8, 9, 10 hours, or some of those 5 hours, 5 to 10 hours a night. So you're fasting. So when the first meal that you eat, you're breaking the fast, and that's where breakfast comes from.
Yeah.
So learn something every day. All great ideas. Okay. Moving on. Let's see here. When you go to restaurants there in Nashville, are you seeing issues where the restaurants are having limited amount of servers and bartenders and limited amount of help?
you know, it's unfair to put Nashville in you know, in any of these kind of things because there are so many musicians that come here from all over the country, and even, you know, get a green card and come from Canada or wherever they come from. But they quickly learn you can't live off a tip jar, so you have to get a job. So 99%, I want to say, of these waitresses and waiters that you come across in Nashville are musicians. So that's kind of a hard thing to say. So I haven't seen a real shortage of wait staff. If we go to, say, the corner bar or the kind of thing, corner burger bar, we got one that Peggy and I like to go to. But we do see, you know, the bartender will come around and he's waiting tables. So I don't know. Maybe I don't frequent enough to really see it.
Well, no, you make a good point. And a lot of these cities that are more like a tourist type attraction city, they probably have less problems. But they did a recent survey, a company called Alignable did a survey with small U.S. restaurants, and 85% of the restaurants say it's still very difficult to find staff. The company polled small and medium-sized business owners between August 15th and September 13th and found that 803 restaurant owners said it was very difficult to find employees, up slightly from the month earlier. So I know in, like, my area they're having difficulty. And on some restaurants they've actually had to shut their doors because they just don't have not enough people. Sure. Matter of fact, there was a Chick-fil-A, I believe it was in North Carolina, that normally had 26 people on staff, and they only had 3 people that were showing up to work, and they had to shut down their operation because they didn't have enough people to work in the restaurant.
My goodness. Now, this,
yeah.
I have yet to go to a Chick-fil-A and see a shortage of people. I've yet to go to any of those. They're just to see those. But, yeah, I would imagine it would be. But, you know, they keep saying that the workforce is staying home because they're receiving a check and there's no money to stay at home. Aren't those, you know, I ask you, Frank, aren't those checks, aren't they drying up, or haven't they already?
I think they're drying up. I think, and yes, most of them have dried up. I think there was a couple of states, if I'm not mistaken, I think California was one of them, or somebody else was in Minnesota. They had extended them a little longer, but I think in October they're all supposed to end. And, yeah, I think what we're finding in the industry I'm in, that people are jumping from job to job because people are offering more money, and they're just saying, well, I'm making $20 here, but down the street somebody's going to pay $25. So a lot of people are leaving these jobs just to go pick up something where they can make a little bit more money, and it's gotten so competitive that these companies are having to pay quite a bit of money just to keep staff. So I think that's part of it.
Yeah.
I mean, there's 11 million job openings last week, wanted type openings and ads all around the country. So there's a lot of places to go to work.
Yeah, and if you are a job hopper and you bounce from job to job, but eventually you wear out your welcome when you're doing that. But I've seen it in the other industry. I do IT work and that kind of stuff. I see that in that industry as well, as trying to, it's hard to find people that will show up to do work, you know, to sweat and actually, you know, do the work itself. But I don't know. We'll see what happens in October. If you say, you know, those checks are going to dry up, the ultimate, you know, drop dead cutoff. Unless the Dems come out and they, you know, want to save that and keep that perpetuating, I'd hate to see that because it's so bad on our country it's bad on the individually.
Yeah, it's a weird time. I keep saying it to everybody. It's a weird time. It's like it's getting weirder and weirder every day. But here we are. Let's see here. Another story. That one I want to save to last. Oh, okay. Well, here's one. We're talking about California a second ago. When you think of California, Ryan, when it comes to food and beverages, what do you think of?
When I think of food and beverages in California, I would think of, there's so many things out in Cali. You know, it would be the Mexican food in San Diego. It would be the, you know, the grapes or olives in the Central Valley. San Francisco, the seafood, incredible. It used to be anyway. And then up in the foothills, you know, good beef and wines. And the wines up in the foothills where I'm originally from are just, it's fantastic up there. So I don't know. It's like a country to itself, and it has its, you know, it has its own culture. It certainly has its own foods.
Well, you didn't mention, and I didn't think you would mention it, but you need to start, when you start thinking of California and Florida, the new thing that's being tested in both states because of their type of weather is coffee. Now, when you think of coffee, you think of South America, Juan Valdez, and all that, and I guess Central America. Well, because of all the changes in the environment and the climate and what have you, they're having major problems with the coffee industry down way far south. And so now they're doing some testing of all places, which I was surprised where this was, is they're testing in Ventura County. They're actually testing coffee. They've planted 20,000 coffee trees. Farmer David Armstrong recently finished planting what is likely the most challenging crop his family has ever cultivated by planting 20,000 coffee trees. He's actually originally from the Central America, but because of the bad climate and the droughts and things they're having, they're trying to actually grow in Ventura, California. Coffee is largely produced in the coffee belt located between the Tropic of Cancer and the Tropic of Capricorn, where countries such as Brazil, Colombia, Ethiopia, and Vietnam, which, by the way, we talked about this in last week's show, that Vietnam is one of the largest coffee-growing regions in all of the world. But they're having major, major issues with all the climate changes. So they have now found that California and Florida may have the best climate, and they're doing the testing now because of the altering temperatures even in California and Florida to grow coffee. Which I find that very interesting. It says traditional producers of coffee such as Colombia, Brazil, and Vietnam have suffered from the impact of extreme heat and changing rain patterns. Botanists and researchers are looking to plant hardier crop varieties for some of those nations that have been growing coffee in the past, but they believe that California and Florida may become the new coffee area for the world. Interesting.
I would put my money, if I was a betting man, I would put my money on Florida for the win. California and coffee, I don't think it has the humidity, nor does it have the rain on a regular basis. So my gut feeling, and I would throw that up, my opinion only, has a flop for California and coffee.
Now, Ventura does get more rain than other parts of Southern California, but still, it takes a lot of rain for coffee plants, and because I actually grew some. I lived on the Central Coast in California, and I grew some up in the Central Coast, and it takes a lot of heat and a lot of water. And you're right. I think Florida has a better chance.
Yeah, I think so. The humidity down here there sometimes, I mean, I'm, you know, in Tennessee, but we have humidity that gets ungodly sometimes, and Georgia's the same. And Florida, certainly you can cut the air with a knife. It gets so humid, but California, I think that's going to be a flop. They got to stay with almonds, you know, they got to stay with what they know and can survive in a drought, because, I don't see California get changing its weather pattern. And, you know, isn't it interesting? I mean, where does that come from? It sounds like a very pro climate change write-up that would say that. Oh my God!
Oh, you know what? You're actually right. It came from NPR.
Oh, there you go. Oh, bingo!
There you go. That was very, very astute. You're right. It came. It's a story that's written by NPR. So yeah, you might be right.
I mean, it's everywhere. It's in our movies and all. I mean, I saw a movie the other night, which the movies write as a footnote. They're terrible. There's no writing. There's no acting. But anyway, it was definitely throwing in the climate change situation. And it was just like in an, oh, by the way, in passing, as a matter of fact, that it's a climate change, you know, is the cause of all of our woes. It's like, come on, beating the drum, beating it a little too long.
Well, who knows? 20 years from now, yeah, when I'm sitting in my rocking chair hitting kids over the head with my cane, maybe Florida and California will be the new coffee capitals of the world. We'll see. Somebody thinks they're spending a lot of money to buy it. All right, I'm going to take another break, and actually I'm going to pick two songs that I like of Brian Mack. And you're probably going to laugh at the first one I'm going to pick, but I always like that song, Moonshine Glow, that you did. How long ago did you do that song?
Oh, my gosh. That was when I first came to Tennessee, and I took a tour of a distillery that's up in the hills and of Tennessee. And, in fact, Al Capone actually owned it in its history. Short Mountain Distillery, and I came back with a bottle of that and sat down and wrote that song up on a mountaintop, like it's a moonshine glow, you know.
I always like that song. I know it's not one that you don't really talk about much, but I always thought it was a cool song. And then, of course, the other one, which basically should be my theme song, which is Do I Drive Women Crazy? That one has also been one of my favorites.
Oh, we know you do drive women crazy, Frank. We do know that.
Yeah, I know. Or do I just find them that way?
You find them that way.
Yeah. Oh, well. All right, we're going to play a couple of those with Brian Mack songs, and we're going to come back, you got to stick around. I'll just give you a hint. The last story we're going to have is about potty training cows. So you don't go away. There's actually people out there who are teaching cows how to be potty trained. Hang on one time. We'll be right back. This is Brian Mack, Moonshine Glow, and then also Do I Drive Women Crazy?
Take me back.
Do I drive him crazy, or do I just find him that way? I've been married at least 3 times. You never know just what you'll find. Last one still sits in county jail. Smashed my truck and then for love, she carved her name in the hood with a bug. Tried to tell the judge her name wasn't Sue. Do I drive them in crazy, or do I just find them that way? And on a date the other night, you never know just what you'll find. The online service says this is the one. Finished her second bottle of wine, I sat and wondered what's my line. She left the bar with a guy she said she knew.
Crazy. Welcome back. That was Brian Mack. And by the way, I have to tell you a funny story about moonshine. I went to a neighbor's house and I was responsible for making desserts. So I made an apple pie, and I don't know what got into me. I guess just being me, I decided to, after the apple pie was done, to take a turkey baster, and I have apple pie moonshine that I drink. Oh. I keep it in the refrigerator all the time. So I decided to take that turkey baster and squirt some apple pie moonshine in that apple pie. Oh my! I'm telling you, that was the happiest crowd at dessert time that I've ever been in my life. And I never told anybody. They all said, "Oh man, this is the best apple pie I've ever had." So if you want to have fun with your friends, make an apple pie and take a turkey baster and squirt in some apple pie moonshine. It's a great dessert.
Get some shine.
They all had the moonshine glow, too. Okay.
Oh, I bet they did.
All right. Moving along. The next story, this is another one of those stories. I'm just like, I can't believe I'm reading this. But scientists in Germany are potty training cows. And they have developed what they call the Moolu, M-O-O-L-O-O, and all of this is to save the environment, Brian. You know, we talked about the environment when we went to break, and
yeah.
Well, now they're teaching cows that potty train cows to take a leak and do their business in what's called a moo-loo. A study by the Research Institute for Farm Animal Biology in Germany revealed that this is very interesting, because I'm really surprised at how smart cows are, but they revealed that cows whose urine causes environmental harm can be successfully toilet trained. According to a study published Monday by the Research Institute for Farm Animal Biology in Germany, scientists taught cows to urinate in a designated area dubbed the moo-loo. Listen how quick this was done, too. Study revealed that over the course of 15 training sessions, researchers were able to direct cows into the barn, into the moo-loo area to urinate. Scientists rewarded the cows with a treat when they successfully used the moo-loo and learned to control their urinary reflexes. Within one or two urinations, most of the animals were walking down the alleyway, pushing open the door, and going into the toilet, said Lindsay Matthews, a New Zealand-based animal behavioral expert and the lead author of the study. According to researchers, 11 of the 16 calves were successfully trained within a few weeks, comparing the performance level to that of a young cow. I mean, it takes kids longer time than that to learn how to use the potty, doesn't it?
Boy, they're dishing out money to study all kinds of things, aren't they? By the way, I thought it was the flatulence that was the cow's demise, not their urine. That's news to me, right?
Yeah, it's the cow farts, it's the cow urine, it's the cow defecation, it's the cow everything. So they're going to save our world, I guess, by now with cow toilets in the barn.
The thing is that they're getting on the cows, but have they ever driven by a hog confined in Iowa on a hot summer day?
Well, I guess they say pigs are actually one of the smartest farm animals out there. So, hey, if you can teach a cow, why can't we teach a pig to go to the moo-loo? That would be
put
a moo-loo.
Put
diapers on pigs. This is normally it is assumed that cattle are not able to control their defecation or urination, said Dr. Jan Langbein, FBN scientist. Cattle, like many other animals or farm animals, are quite intelligent and capable of learning. Why shouldn't they also be able to learn how to use the toilet? Cow urine contains high amounts of nitrate, which can contaminate waterways or create airborne nitrous oxide once it enters the soil if not appropriately managed. By toilet training cows who urinate frequently, researchers believe greenhouse gas emissions can be reduced significantly. So there you go.
Yeah.
That's
an amazing story, because I look at our Yorkshire Terrier, and there's no way you can potty train a Yorkshire Terrier. So I don't know how you can get into potty training cows. I mean, we got a Yorkshire Terrier walking around in a diaper at our house. So I don't
know. Really?
Yeah.
It's a true story, and they're spending lots of money to develop these cow toilets. So coming to a barn near you. How'd you like to have that job of cleaning that toilet, though?
Oh, no. That came across my mind, too. No, thank you. But the thing is, how come we're never on that list of receiving money to study something, Frank? How come we're not on that list?
That's true. I should probably ask for a grant on just take a study on how people are affected by apple pie moonshines when it's squirt into an apple pie, and then do a report on that and a study on what the benefits and the downsides and the plus sides of that.
Yeah.
It's no more crazy.
That story right there. We got to study that. Absolutely.
Yep. Why not? they're giving money out left and right for all these crazy studies. That was like
a $300,000 grant just so we can study moonshine on an apple pie.
There you go. Last week, Carrie and I talked about this on the show. They did a study, and I think it was $250,000, $300,000. I believe it was the University of Ohio. I can't remember who did it. But anyway, they did a study to find out if a woman eats one avocado a day, what does it do to her health? And they did this study with multitudes of women over a long period of time, and they found that if women eat one avocado a day, that it affects their, I think how you say it, visceral fat in their belly. And they actually saw it drop, the visceral fat drop by eating one avocado a day. So you say, well, that's interesting. But here's the catch. Guess who paid for the study?
Yeah, who?
the Avocado Board paid for the study. So, of course, they're going to find some kind of benefit from eating one avocado a day. So that's the other part. Who pays for this? Maybe we can get some apple pie moonshine guy to pay for our study.
There you go, right there. We're going to see apple pies. Maybe we've got crust. Let's see, how many people can we pull in to get this grant going? We got to do this.
Yeah, we're going to do this. I mean, I did my own little personal one apple pie study, and I saw all kinds of benefits from it. So I think that we need to do this with about 30 or 40,000 people over a period of time, and then we can take all the data down.
I would be kind of concerned about people driving home. You would think, I promise you, officer, I only had one. I only had one place.
Well, luckily, I'm in an area where everybody's like within like less than a mile from home. It was a neighborhood party, but yeah, that'd be something you wouldn't want to kind of slide in on grandma if she had to drive home 15, 20 miles away.
Well, just make sure everybody's staggering distance from home. Yeah.
But it was the best apple pie they had ever had. Several people.
I bet. I'm coming to your house for my pie. Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're down to the last 13 minutes or so, and I appreciate, Brian, you coming on and filling in as the co-host this evening. And is there anything you'd like to tell the listening audience about anything other than, you can talk about your new album, but anything else that you're doing you want to pass along?
No, well, the records keep coming, and we keep trying to come up with different ideas. It's mostly Americana, wooden music, that kind of thing. So if you like that kind of wooden bluegrass, one foot in bluegrass, one foot in country, that's the kind of music I like to play with. I, as far as the things that are coming up and all, I'm just wait and see. That seems to be all of us are going to wait and see as to what's going to happen and what's going to happen next. So I like these little stories that you got about your apple pie and all those. Those are good stories to have.
you're not out and about playing in any of the venues and bars or anything at this point still, right?
No. Bobby's Idle Hour, it relocated because they wanted to put up a building and a parking lot. So they took the old, they destroyed the old Bobby's Idle Hour, which was a very historic stage. I mean, Johnny Cash played that, Chris Christopherson, you just name anybody, Ronnie Van Zant came here and played. I mean, just on and on, the list of people that have played on that stage. But they got a new location. One of the bartenders got some money, and they got together, and they found a new location. It's still a Music Row, and it's been opening up, and so this is where songwriters go to test their wares, to air out a song and see if you can, what kind of response you can get. Do people get it? Is there a hook? Is there a riff that they like? That kind of thing. And it's camaraderie between the songwriters in town. So I'm glad to see Bobby's is opening up again. So I might be getting back into there on their list and getting in there and playing. It's it's a different kind of thing when you come to Nashville and you want to see songwriters or hear their music. You're going to hear it on an acoustic guitar, probably three guys or gals sitting on stools playing their song in one after another. And it's kind of a neat way to hear a song that you may hear on the radio later. Of course, you can go downtown and hear the songs that are popular on the radio and those people are playing and covering those songs. But the real nuts and bolts of it is up in Music Row. And I highly recommend Bobby's Idle Hour. If you come to Nashville, seek it out, find it. There's another one, the Commodore, which is kind of right down in West Nashville. And they do writer nights and things like that. But you just do a quick search and you can find writer's nights all around town here. So that's about me. That's about all I know.
That's about you. I do appreciate you taking time. And everybody go. You said you can find your music on CD Baby, or you can go find Brian on Facebook and If He's Not in Jail, and check out his music. And then when you do get the new CD, what do they call them now? Are they still called CDs? Are they called albums? I always get confused. What are they called now? EPs? What is it? What's the technical term
for that? EP. Everybody's been doing the EP. So it's basically you're spending the same money and you're getting 6 to 8 songs. Okay. You know, the traditional 13, 14 songs on a record, it's hard to find those anymore. People will usually take a record and break it up. But, yeah, EPs. But the problem is everything's sold in singles now. So if you're going to – it's worth the whole record, yeah.
Well, go out and go buy his songs, too, because you can buy those one at a time with any music that you like. And when we close out the show here, I'm going to play, of course, my favorite – song that you did, which is Smiles All Around, which everybody in the world right now needs a lot more smiles all around. And I'll probably sneak in a couple of more Brian Mack songs. If you want to find out more about the stories that we talked about on the show, you can go to grillionideasradio.com. And usually by Sunday each week, when I get my lazy butt up and decide to sit down and do the work on the website, I'll post on the blog section all the stories that we talked about and some of the stories we didn't get to. Also, there is a replay tab on the website. You can hear any of the replays that we've had in the last, 3.5 months now. Any of those that you want to go back and listen to. They're always there in the archives, and hopefully next week, not that I'm saying goodbye to Brian, but hopefully next week Carrie will be back with us. She had last-minute issues that popped up. And once again, Brian, I really do appreciate you coming on and helping us out.
Oh, thank you, Frank. I was just more than willing to just wide open to helping you out anytime, buddy. Absolutely. Just give me a call or message me, and I'm there.
All right. Thank you. Everybody come back and join us next week, and we're going to close out with some Brian Mack music, and we will see you next Saturday.
smiles all around. Turn off that frown. We may be down, but what a laugh. Fortune smiles all around.
Make it all right. Keep on
Thanks for listening to Brilliant Ideas Radio with Frank and Carrie. Opinions, comments, and representations made by the hosts and guests of this program are not necessarily shared by this station and are purely for entertainment purposes. Explore more about our show, the hosts, and, of course, the ideas at brilliantideasradio.com.